Okay, a very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So it's 3 o'clock, 1st of November, 2020, Sunday. We will continue with our Sunday class sharing, following the book, The Path to Truth, for bodhisattvas, for modern day bodhisattva practitioner. So we are at page 220. The title is School for Nursing Wisdom Life. This one is a very appropriate Dhamma title because it's based on the chapter on virtue from the Sutta of Infinite Meaning, Wuliang Yi Jing. This Wuliang Yi Jing, they have three books, three chapters actually. First chapter is virtue. Second chapter is on the teaching, the preaching part. Then the third chapter is on the 10 meritorious action. So this chapter on virtue is very, very unique and very special. Yeah, it talks about virtue of great beings, especially bodhisattvas. And here, the stanza that they selected from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning is very meaningful. It said, "Bodhisattvas are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge of all living beings," which is true. Where bodhisattva has the Dhamma and they have the deep cultivation, and their understanding is a lot more stable than the usual sainthood way enlightened beings. They are the source of relief, protection, and great support for all living beings because of their vows. They vow to liberate the limitless and countless living beings. They vow to endure all sufferings, and they vow to severe all suffering too. Then after that, they vow to cultivate and perfect all of wisdom, leading to the perfection of wisdom. And the last one is to perfect the 10 perfection to be Samasa Buddha. Because of their vow, they have this ability to be a source of relief, protection, and great support for living beings. They are the great guiding teacher, which is very true for all sentient beings everywhere. That's why bodhisattva are special beings, great beings. They are not ordinary beings. So this is very meaningful. I mentioned just now, we will be following this book, The Path to Truth for Modern Day Bodhisattva Practitioner. We are at page 220. The title is Schools for Nurturing Wisdom Life. So this title is very cute, very appropriate. So the title is based on one of the stanza from chapter one of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. Means Wuliang Yi Jing. This is a Mahayana Pure Land teaching. So Wuliang Yi Jing has three chapters. First chapter is about virtue. Virtue here doesn't mean ordinary virtue. Virtue here means virtue for great beings. That's why this topic on virtue is a very exceptional topic. Its meaning is very deep. Then, apart from virtue, he also emphasized a lot of the great ability of bodhisattvas. How? Because of their very unique and special virtue, they can do great things. They can be a field of blessing and merit to all beings. And also, it points towards their vows, their bodhisattva vows. How they walk the path of Dhamma, following the bodhisattva way. And these are all very meaningful and very beautiful. So all these teachings are beneficial, very, very beneficial. That's why I will read to you that stanza so that you understand. It is stated in the section on virtue from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, chapter 1. So according to this chapter, this stanza, is it bodhisattvas are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge for all living beings. This is very true. Not only is a refuge, it's a safe, stable, and joyful refuge because of the unique qualities of these great beings, bodhisattvas. You see, as bodhisattvas, they are actually enlightened beings that walk the path of Dhamma to perfect themselves, to become Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened one. And because of that, they have the Dhamma. So they are representation of the Triple Gem. First of the Triple Gem is the Buddha, which they haven't realized. But the second one, the Dhamma, they have. They already have. That's why they can share with you. Then number three is the Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. They also fulfill that. So out of the Triple Gem, the second and the third one, they have. That's why they can be a very unique refuge. And this refuge is very safe, very stable, and very unique. Because the way bodhisattva come is because of their vows. And their vows make them that way. That's why these great bodhisattvas, they not only let you feel safe, they give you joy. They stabilize your understanding, your cultivation. That's why in the stanza is mentioned, bodhisattvas are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge of all living beings. So now you understand, it's deep meaning. And some of the great beings who are very advanced in their cultivation, they actually also have the embodiment of Buddhahood. They already have that perfection done, developed, but they purposely put in that vow to delay their Sammasambuddhahood and allow their nature to continue to do that work. So those great beings are like Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Pusien Pusa, or Samantarabhara Bodhisattva, and also Manjushri Bodhisattvas. Then also we have our Earth Store Bodhisattva. So all these great beings, they already perfected themselves, but they delay their Buddhahood because of their vow. And they like to do this work. Then there are also other great beings, which you can find in the Mahayana Sutta. One of them is Vimalakirti. He like to come in lay form. He doesn't like to come in the Sangha form. He prefer the lay life. And he has cultivated very long, perfected himself very long. And he has met up with 90 million Sammasambuddha. Just imagine his perfection, his cultivation, his wisdom and virtue. These are very unique great beings. That's why they represent the Triple Gem. When you are with them, you feel safe, you feel joy, and you can develop the understanding very fast. That's why they are a source of inspiration. They let you feel safe, they stabilize your understanding and help you to grow in the path of Dhamma. Then through knowing them, you develop a lot of joy. That's the reason why the saying goes, we go back to the quote. He said, Bodhisattvas are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge for all living beings. Then the stanza continues, they are also the source of relief. Whatever your problem, they can help you to solve them, relief. Then they can give you the understanding to protect yourself, how you live your life, so that the Dhamma protects you. If you take care of karma, karma protects you. How to take care of karma? Avoid all evil, cultivate virtue. That's why virtue is your highest protection. And great support for all living beings because of their vows. They are the great guiding teacher of all sentient beings everywhere, which is very true because they come for the living beings. Their first vow, born of great love and compassion, is to take a cross or transform all living beings until they realize enlightenment or reach the other shore, or put them on the path of the Bodhisattva, to walk the path of Bodhisattva, to cultivate the Bodhisattva way. So this is the meaning of virtue for great beings. So this is only one of the stanza. Earlier one we have already discussed. So again, I repeat, this stanza comes from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Jing. So this Wu Liang Yi Jing, I explained just now. There are three chapters. I will just briefly go through with you so that after this book, The Path to Truth, we will go into that book, Wu Liang Yi Jing. So this book, Wu Liang Yi Jing, is very unique, very, very unique. Chapter 1 is on virtue, virtue of great beings. Then chapter 2 is on expounding the Dhamma, how great beings expound the Dhamma. Then finally, chapter 3 is the 10 merits. These 10 merits extend beyond the 10 meritorious section. So as we go through, we will learn. And this sutta is very beautiful. Then there is another sutta. They call it the Threefold Lotus Sutta. Threefold Lotus Sutta. They are the major teaching. Within this Threefold Lotus Sutta, they break it up. They break it up into three great teachings. The first one is Wu Liang Yi Jing, Sutra of Infinite Meaning, which I have gone through with you. There are three chapters inside there. So that will be the next book we will follow. Then after that is the Lotus Sutta, the second book of the Threefold Lotus Sutta is the Lotus Sutta itself. And this Lotus Sutta is a very good book. It is supposed to be the teaching of Sakyamuni Buddha that actually predicted a lot of his disciple finally becoming Samasambuddha. And a lot of very beautiful teachings and examples were given inside there. Then after that is the final chapter, which is the book or the teaching by Samantara Bodhisattva, the meditation teaching of Samantara Bodhisattva. That is also a very unique book. That one is also the teaching that is highly respected by the Mahayana. So these threefold Lotus Sutta, they call it San Bu Jing, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing, 妙法莲华三部经 is the wonderful Lotus Sutta threefold wonderful Lotus Sutta、and that threefold Lotus Sutta is a very complete teaching. It starts with the virtue of the great beings, then how they preach the Dhamma, how they actuallyexpound the Dhamma, then how they develop the 10 merits to develop a perfectional virtue leading to perfectional wisdom. The strange thing about virtue is you must understand, without virtue, without true virtue, you will never have wisdom.To have true virtue, you must develop the wisdom first. Without wisdom, there is no real virtue. So when you can perfect your wisdom, it will lead to the perfection of virtue. The two go together. They are not separated from each other. So Sammasambuddha being special is because they have perfected all the virtue and the wisdom. That's why they are called the special beings, the bipeds. They have perfected all understanding, which is wisdom, leading to the perfection of all virtue. That's why they are called the bipeds that have these two special things. So you can say the Sammasambuddha, when they arise,They are the wisest and the most virtuous being ever to be born. That's why to have them as our teacher, our guide, we should have gratitude towards them. We should thank them profusely. We should develop unshakable faith in them. Because to have such a being as your guide, as your teacher, you should count your blessing.You will have profound gratitude and respect for them. That's how the Saddha, the Virya come when you know who they are, these great beings, especially Sammasambuddha. So these are the preliminary understanding that we need to know before we go into the teachings. So the reason why I prepare you for thefuture book that we are going to follow is to let you understand the full picture of the teaching. Because Mahayana teaching is not easy for normal Theravada traditional practitioner to understand. Even the Mahayana practitioner themselves have problem understanding all these suttas. Because all these suttas are for enlightening.They are not easy to comprehend. Ordinary cultivator or ordinary being can never comprehend. You need to really, really have that perfection and cultivation. Otherwise, you can't. That's the reason why even Xianhua also mentioned, for any being to teach some of the Mahayana teaching,especially the Heart Sutta, or the Surangama Sutta, or the Diamond Sutta, or any of these Sutra of Infinite Meaning, the Lotus Sutta, and also the Threefold Lotus Sutta. Wherever that location where this being canreally teach this type of teaching, that place must be very, very special, and the being who can deliver must be very special. Otherwise, this teaching cannot be delivered. So it's already an acknowledged fact and understanding. So we are indeed very blessed because we are in the Sasana of Sakyamuni Buddha.And the teachings are available, and there are beings who can comprehend this teaching and share it with the world. That's why as Kriyamita, we should rejoice. We should count our blessing, our gratitude, that we can receive this. And all these are possible because of your merits too. Because there are causes and conditions before in the past. You must have developed certain type of affinity with the Triple Gem, the Great Beings. And you must have made certain vows. You must develop the affinity and link to receive all this teaching. And even though you have the condition to receive, but how much you can understand, receive and tap depend on your cultivation. If you have not cultivated deep enough, thorough enough in the past, then this life you come is already a great blessing to receive the teaching. So whatever you can accumulate or study or learn, develop the faith, the sattva, the virya, then sincerely walk the path to perfect yourself. Persevere, just do, cultivate, don't try to know. Make that vow, make that aspiration. Follow the format of the Bodhisattva vow that I have given you, the yellow form. And many Kriyamita has benefited from it because they try it and they see the big change in them. So you should also give it a try. No harm, doesn't cost you any money. And if it's something that really benefits you, you will reap the reward and you will have a lot of joy. Then after that, when the condition arises, you will rejoice. Then it's your turn to share. It's your turn to be a blessing to all. That's why our mission in this, my nature's mission in this life, is to pass on this teaching and understanding. Like I always say, everything just fall into place and happen, come. The book come, the teaching come, the website come, all the sharing come. So all these are not by accident or by chance. And when they come, like I always say, my nature is not interested in the numbers. It's more interested in those who have affinity and condition. Innate quality practitioner and cultivator. So this is a good way to groom cultivator who are sincere, who have the faith, and who have the understanding to walk this path. So this great Dharma family which we created through the My Kriyamita is going to continue to evolve and spin off a lot of great cultivators and beings. Then whoever who benefited from what we do in the future or distant future, they will be connected back to us. Then in a similar way or analogy, like those who do direct selling or they call multi-level marketing, MLM, I'm not encouraging you to do all those things and go into that. I wanted to give you an analogy on it. You remember under this MLM, multiple level marketing, or what they call direct selling, they normally have an agent. Those who start early, they get the downline. Then I don't know whether it's Amway, I think it must be Amway, I don't know what, I forgot the MLM. The first one that started the chain, they call it the diamond member or something like that. Then everyone that branched down and recruit and expand, they have this commission coming back to the diamond guy. So when you started this, if you are the original, you are like the early agent who recruited all these members. Then after that, those downline that recruit, nothing to do with you, but it accrue all the affinity, the merits, the wholesomeness, all these things you get to tap back. So in that similar way, when you understand, you should rejoice that you can be part of the original handful of Kalyanamitta who started all this. Especially Sister Yun Chan. She was the one that invited me to come out in the year 2004. And because of her, everything became possible. Then later, other Kalyanamittas come in. They start to form the volunteer group to help us. So all these are very wholesome, very beautiful. So with that, I will continue my sharing. It's okay, just let it be. Sorry, because the wind outside is very strong. Then my glass door on this side, with the curtain, the wind, like they are rejoicing. So never mind. I don't think it will affect the recording. Or as I say, it becomes stronger. See, they're really rejoicing. Okay, so I'll continue with the sharing. So after the introduction, now we go in. We see what the author has to share. In 2003, Iran was hit by a devastating earthquake. We heard this shocking news, and we were preparing for Cixi's annual year-end blessing ceremony. Oh, they also have their annual year-end blessing ceremony. Ours, we are different. We have the annual Kalyanamitta gathering. And that gathering so happened to coincide with my birthday. So we do it every year without fail on the month of November. October, sorry. October, my birthday is in October. So this year we didn't meet up in person, we did a Zoom gathering. And it turned out to be beautiful too. Okay, then I'll continue. Since there were no Cixi volunteer in Iran, the author asked their staff in the Department of Religious Culture and Humanitarian Aid to pay close attention to the details of the earthquake to assess whether Iran needs help. As we follow reports about the disaster, we learn that Bam, an ancient city more than 1,000 years old and a popular tourist attraction, was completely leveled by earthquake. On the evening news, we saw footage of the collapsed city and learned that the death toll was in the tens of thousands. It was extremely heartbreaking. Within 36 hours after the quake, Cixi mobilized the first medical and disaster assessment team to travel to Iran. It was December then, and the temperature difference between day and night was great. We were concerned that the tremendous amount of casualty might cause an outbreak of infectious disease. I'm very grateful to the Cixi medical team who joined the relief team. Every time they went to Iran to provide aid, the medical team includes several assistant superintendent, cardiologists, infectious disease specialists, surgeons, orthopedics, and emergency room doctors and nurses from Hualien Cixi General Hospital. This was the first time Cixi volunteer went to Iran. In the light of language barrier and the local religion being Islam, Cixi volunteers Hu Guangchuang from Turkey and Chen Qi Chuhua from Jordan also traveled to Iran to join the team from Taiwan. Team members had to fly first to the capital, Tehran, and then transfer to Bam. As soon as they arrived in Tehran, they saw many seriously injured victims who had been evacuated from the disaster area. The medical team immediately took action to provide emergency care. They already had an idea of the damage and casualty before they reached the disaster area. The disaster assessment team called from Tehran to give us a status report. I suggest that we rent a tour bus in Tehran to serve as a mobile care vehicle so that they can be made use of. So they rented a bus and turned it into a mobile medical clinic to help those who were injured. In addition to saving lives and treating injuries, the team also assisted in providing material necessity and emotional comfort for those affected. The team went to hard hit area to assess damage and plan for relief distribution. Taiwan's Council of Agriculture have provided rice for 30 volunteers to distribute to the quick survival. With careful assessment and planning, and after overcoming all sorts of difficulties, Suji volunteer personally delivered the rice to the survivor in mid-March. With utmost sincerity and respect, volunteers distributed blankets and warm clothing to the survivor, which were deeply touched. The people of Iran were deeply touched. It even transcend cultural barrier. Suji continued with mid and long-term relief effort well after emergency relief effort ended. More than 1,000 schools has been damaged and destroyed. The education of the students of this school were affected and they could not be delayed. So we collaborated with the local agency to begin Project Hope to rebuild schools in Bum. Project Hope construction began in April. It was not yet summer, but the weather was already scorching hot and the air was very dusty. Whenever the wind blew, while Suji volunteers visited the construction site, they saw students taking a test out in the sun on a day that is over 50 degrees Celsius or equivalent to 122 degrees Fahrenheit. It was so hot that a Suji staff member said, "I burned my hand from grasping my cell phone." Yet this student stood in the cement ground to take their test, or to set their test. They sat on the cement ground to take their test. It was indeed a test for them. Nevertheless, this student did not yield to such unbearable conditions. Suji helped build 5 schools in Bum. When the first floor had just been completed and the second and third floor were still under construction, the teachers brought their students into the unfinished school's building for class. We were worried about the students' safety, but the local staff member said, "We cannot help it. It is so hot outside. Our feet get burned even with shoe on. The students have it even worse." The teachers love and care for their students. We cannot stop them. So that's why they went in. The students were just happy to be in the shade. They were truly contented. After the earthquake in Iran, Suji encouraged everyone to help and support the survivors in Bum. Based on our spirit of being the first to arrive and the last to leave, we first provided emergency relief and then we completed the construction of the school. We are happy for the people there and hope that they will not be affected by disaster again so that they can live peacefully and happily. so that they can live a peaceful and happy life from then on. Tzuchi's goal is to provide safety. Oh, sorry, is to provide safe and joyful refuge, and to be a guiding teacher for all sentient beings. So here it means setting good example, right? So that people understand how human beings that have the Dhamma or the sincerity, the virtue and the good teaching, how they can sacrifice and actually help relieve suffering and go all the way to do all these things. So it's like a guiding light to remind people that we can do our part, we can help out in relief work if there is a understanding, if there is faith, if there is this sincere intent to go this way. Because whatever we do, develop wholesomeness, develop joy, happiness and hope. When people are affected by earthquake, disaster or nature's calamity, the first thing that comes to them is relief suffering, help, hope, and they will be full of gratitude when they see the relief worker coming. When they receive help, they really, in the midst of that disaster stricken situation, when they are lack of food, lack of shelter, lack of warm clothing, lack of care, medical attention, everything, all of a sudden they see these people whom they don't know from another culture, another religion coming to help them. That will actually change their outlook of life. They will not like have that close-minded thinking that only their religious people can help them, only their God can help them. So all this is a very powerful mindset transformation. When you see how people help you and do this to you, you are willing to commit yourself to do the same work. That's the reason why a lot of these people who has received such help and aids, when they recovered, they volunteer to actually do the same for others. That's how Tzuchi organization, they grew, the members grew. And that's how, as an organization, you start with pure, sincere intent, then things can really unfold and manifest. And it can provide great, wonderful, big scale relief to the world. And everything starts small, with a sincere intent, with a good teacher or somebody who headed the organization must have the Dhamma and the understanding to start all this. Then it can develop into something beautiful, great, sophisticated, and very, very powerful. So do not underestimate a very initial, single, virtuous intent. That virtuous intent can transform into great things. So everything starts from step one, like the famous saying in China, whatever you experience, start with the first step. So 1,000 steps starts with the first step. The first step is very important. The first step to give it a try, to work towards it. That's the reason why when I say when you cultivate, don't try to know, develop sincerity, develop faith, and just do, move. And when the result unfold, you will know, it give you faith, it strengthen your faith. Then you will continue to walk this path with joy, with sincerity, with understanding. You follow the Dhamma way, the Dhamma will protect you, the Dhamma will reward you. So Dhamma way is to follow the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil action, speech, and thought process. So avoiding evil is very important. To do that, we need to hold on to our precept. We need to undertake the training rule not to violate all these moral precepts, which constitute major evil. Then we must cultivate and train our mind to be heedful, to be mindful, to be sensitive, to understand what constitutes evil so that we can avoid evil, abandon them. Then cultivate what constitutes wholesomeness, following the teaching, Noble Eightfold Path teaching. From right view, we develop right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, or right way of living life. Then when we understand what constitutes right view, we will be able to expand on what constitutes right thought, right speech, and right action. Then we can arise the right effort to cultivate whatever right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in us. Then with that embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path, we can become beautiful. We can have the right understanding to live life. So when we live life following Noble Eightfold Path, which is absence of negativity, but full of wholesomeness and virtue and goodness and kindness, your life will take a turn. You will become beautiful. You will be rewarded based on what you did. You follow the advice of the Buddha. So this is Dhamma way to avoid all evil, cultivate wholesomeness, virtue, and blessings. So all this understanding is very important. Then finally, when you have enough merits, you also need to develop wisdom. Otherwise, when you live life, when you confront the First Noble Truth reality, especially the irreality, despite your wealth, your merits, or whatever good inheritance, without wisdom, you still will be afflicted. You will still suffer. That's why purification of mind, training your mind to be mindful, stabilize it to be heedful, then use it to develop the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. So with right sati leading to samadhi, accumulating into heedful living or heedfulness, is the way to end suffering, is the way to develop wisdom, to insight into phenomena, to develop the wisdom, the direct seeing, to trigger of enlightenment in the here and the now, so that we are not deluded anymore, so that we are not deceived by the phenomenal world of form, phenomenal world of consciousness. We understand them for what they are. The conditioned world follow a set of nature's law, which are the conditioned Dhamma. Whereas the unconditioned, they are beyond the conditioned Dhamma. They have their own set of wisdom, which are very deep, very profound, because they are the unconditioned. With that, you can penetrate life, you can understand life completely, thoroughly. You are not one-sided. Well, when you live with the unconditioned Dhamma wisdom, then you will not be deceived and deluded by the conditioned world's phenomena and the way the conditioned thing unfolds. You will not get yourself entangled. There is no delusion or ignorance towards all these things, and you can accept whatever arises where you know they are not so real, not what you think, because of their universal characteristic. Anicchang Dukkhang Anatta. Everything within the conditioned world is subject to change. Why? Because they are dependent originating condition arising. They are causal phenomena. Dependent on cause they arise. When the causes continue to sustain them, they continue to exist. But when the causes cease to be, they cease to be. So this is the reason why the Buddha say all of phenomena, sabbe sankhara anicchang, they are impermanent. And because they are impermanent, following nature's condition, you cannot attach, you cannot cling, you cannot want things your way. If condition already supporting all this is already there, existing, nature will unfold in this way. Means the reality is what is. You have to accept the reality of the moment. If you want things your way, you suffer. That's why the second universal characteristic of dukkha arises. When you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, you suffer. Because you want things your way, which is not nature's way. If you want to realize certain things, achieve certain things, you must introduce the appropriate causes and conditions for it to manifest. Where these are the governing law, the nature's law that governs life and existence. If you understand, you know how to develop it, then you have wisdom, you have Dhamma. That's why Dhamma is truth. Dhamma is nature's law. So Dhamma is very beautiful. So all this understanding will unfold when you have the Dhamma. So this is how, as a Dhamma practitioner, as a Buddhist, we develop the understanding of the teaching. Then we liberate our mind. We realize the unconditioned Dhamma. We realize the cessation, which is the unconditioned Nibbana. Then we realize we have a nature which is eternal, never born, because it's never born. It does not get sick, get old and die. So the unborn, the uncreated, the unconditioned, that is our nature, our oneness nature, our true nature, our original nature. From there, all things arise. You will have deep understanding of this. Then you realize the universal characteristic is such, because it's impermanent, it leads to suffering, I already explained. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you cannot say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. This is delusion. That's why the Buddha said that the universal characteristic is anatta, non-self. Anatta is in between. It's neither atta or attaniya. Atta is self, a permanent unchanging entity that you can say, this is me, this is I, where this one is like a soul, permanent, continuously migrate from one life to another life. But the reality is not such. There is no such thing as a soul. Rebirth is not what they think. Rebirth is based on the last thought moment, the rebirth consciousness, conditioned by karmic. So all this understanding will transform you. And because it's all impermanent, leading to suffering, that's why no real meaning. Then non-self is not real, not you, not what you think. So all this will lead you to the understanding of the empty nature of existence. Initially, existence or life looks like very real. Everything looks very real. everything that we come to perceive through our senses like very real. Our physical body like very real, like we exist, like there is a human being, like there is a thinker behind the thought. Like all the sense experience is what we really perceive and sense, like it belongs to us. But when we meditate, we realize the physical body is only make up of element, no knowing goes the way of nature. Then the consciousness has the five aggregate, the four mind aggregate, and the mental form. So this five aggregate, if you were to meditate into it and realize, finally, their universal characteristic, then you realize they are also impermanent, lead to suffering, non-self and empty. Then why are you still deluded by it? Impermanent means like your feeling. They come and they go, dependent on condition, they arise upon contact of senses with the consciousness and the sense data, it triggers the respective sense or consciousness. Then when they arise, you deludedly grasp and cling, you suffer. You believe feeling is you, emotion is you, anger is you, fear is you, worry, anxiety is you. That's why they have power over you. They can grip you and cause you so much suffering and misery. So all this come from your lack of understanding, your self-delusion, your ignorance, your avijja. That's why you project your thought and create that fear. Then you thought fear is you. That's why fear has a great impact on human being. Fear is negative energy, very eerie type of energy. And fear can cause your immune system to drop. And fear can paralyze your ability to do things, to make proper decision, because that fear can intensify and make you crazy and really paralyze a human being. Then anger is the evil root, make you evil. Craving, selfishness are also evil roots, make you evil. So see this in the meditation, understand all this, then you will come to know. Feeling is not what I think. Feeling is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of all, like the physical form. That's why it's he no you, he no me. None of them are me. Then when you realize that the aggregates of my Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana are all have exhibiting this universal characteristic of anicchang, dukkhang, anatta, then you all of a sudden wake up. Then the phenomenal world of form, phenomenal world of consciousness loses its power to deceive you, to delude you. Then you can see things clearly. You can see things as they are. You can understand their universal characteristic. Then your mind liberate and free. From that time onward, the wisdom that you realize through your cultivation, your direct seeing, your silent mind, that one protect the form and mind. That's how you awaken and transform. So this is the Dhamma way. This is the teaching that can really transform living being, that can really give rise to great wisdom, understanding and virtue, and transform that living being into a wonderful being that is a blessing to all. That's why all of these beings, they end up as enlightened beings. But some of them took the bodhisattva way and become bodhisattva great beings. So these are more unique. These are more special. That's why our this book is talking about modern day bodhisattva practitioner. We are not talking about the normal enlightened beings in Hudwe, because they can teach, they can also be a blessing to some, but they don't have that parami and understanding to do the extensive work of a bodhisattva, but they lack the extent of understanding leading to that type of virtue. And so that is the main initial difference. So going the bodhisattva way or not to take that way is an individual choice. Before you understand, you don't try to think and make the choice, because that choice is not going to be the right choice most of the time, because you haven't understood. But if you have gone into the cultivation, stabilize the cultivation, then when you understand, it's different. The decision to go this way is not a choice anymore. Is the understanding that brings you to go this way. Because Krishnamurti say, wherever there is choice, there is confusion. Why do you choose? You choose because you have doubt. You're not sure. Go this way or go that way. Do or not to do. Why must you choose? You only choose when you don't understand. When you understand, you don't choose. It's just like playing card, chairman puts out. That's why you choose to bet. You choose to take risk, like stock market. When to buy, when not to buy. People who choose, most of the time make mistakes. But when you develop the understanding of when to buy and when to sell, you don't choose. Do you understand? What do you buy? You buy into undervalued stock, growth stock, and cyclical stock you buy when they are really low. You buy into value. That's why you do this. It's the understanding that decides. And it's not a choice. You act based on understanding. You buy based on understanding. You sell based on understanding. That is different from choosing. Choosing means you're not sure. Can go in, can make money. Then you tend to make mistake because you follow greed, you follow desire. Your action and decision is ignorant. That's why Krishnamurti say, wherever there is choice, there is confusion. Why do you choose? Because you don't understand. That's why you have to choose. Confusion. And they call it dilemma. There is no dilemma. When the reality is such, you have to accept that reality. Let it unfold. Why must you choose? When I understand, I accept, I move. Condition like that, things will be like that. No need to choose. Wisdom is following understanding. That's why you act according to wisdom. You don't act according to your views, opinion, and your conditioning, and your belief system. That's the power of Dhamma. Dhamma is based on wisdom, based on understanding. So all of your action is based on understanding. You act out of wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path. But this is the teaching that the Buddha realized. And he already stated in the teaching, you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, you will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why this is the meditation. This is the way to act. This is based on right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, the four right effort, right sati and samadhi. This is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. So if you act according to wisdom, means you act according to Noble Eightfold Path. Well, if you do this, the Buddha said, it will lead to the end of all suffering, means you enlighten, you awaken. Noble Eightfold Path is no negativity. Noble Eightfold Path is perfect action, wisdom, without negativity of mind state. It's based on right view, giving rise to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. How can you go wrong? Everything is based on understanding, wisdom, right view, leading to all the subsequent Noble Eightfold Path factors. So this is the beauty of this teaching. You act based on understanding and wisdom, and you don't make choice. Why must you make choice? But a lot of mundane people cannot agree with this statement. Are you in line? There are so many situations where I need to decide, especially people who are sick, to go for chemo or not to go for chemo, to pay for this or not to pay for this. Why can't you find out through understanding and wisdom and make that decision based on understanding? There is not a choice. Understand? Choice means you don't intend to find out. You don't want to know. You just want people to give you answer or advise you. So that is the way most human beings without wisdom will act. But if you have faith in somebody, then you can consult them. So sometimes you can assess that the doctor is sincere and you have faith in him, you can actually follow his advice. Then you act based on that faith in him and understanding. But when you understand the Dhamma, it's not about believing anybody anymore. Because the Dhamma way is a complete understanding. It's the full picture. There is this law of karma, you will know. Whether you decide to go or not to go is all decided by karma. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by you are what you are because of karma. Then when you have the Dhamma, you will see the sign, you will know, meant to be will be. You will meet up with the right doctor. You will meet up with the right people who can give you the correct, appropriate understanding. Then you make a decision. Like when I went for angel, I saw this fall into place. Then I talked to that specialist that my son happened to source through certain type of affinity and condition. Then I check, a lot of things fall into place. Then I say, okay, we go and see this one. Well, my son gave me three options, I think. One in Eye Hill, one in Glen Eagle, and the other one in don't know which hospital. He said, these three are all the good ones recommended by people. Then I read through, I checked their past, their CV, their experience. Then I feel good with this Eye Hill, Dr. Wong, where he many things fall into place. He was trained in Singapore and the hospital that he got his qualification in software is, I think there's a hospital called Santok Singh. What hospital in Singapore? Santok Singh. It seems that one take very long to actually get the specialization. And he came from there. Then he came back to Malaysia. He was promoted to the head of UTM hospital. That's why his CV was very good. Then UPM hospital. I got a Kayamita who the husband also went there and did the thing. And they told me that hospital is very good. Then only I realized Dr. Wong was the head there. That's why they headhunted him and brought him over to Eye Hill. So I said, this is the one. Then I went and talked to him. After I talked to him, from the way he explained to me, I realized this doctor is very sincere. Where got doctor tell you, you are a government servant actually. You don't have to come and see me. Your private sector, I have to pay. You can go to IGN. And he somehow tell me, well, I can recommend you. Yeah, he was also in IGN. He knows some specialist and doctor there. I said, don't worry. I said, I just asked him, how much does this operation roughly cost? So he said, about 30,000. I said, don't worry. This amount of money, I can afford. Then what I want to ask him, the final question is, are you confident? Wow, the way he answered was so beautiful. He said, later on, I came to know he was also a Buddhist. And before he did an operation, he would take vegetarian, and he would chant the Satabhujanga Sutta, the night before or that morning itself. Then when he come to the clinic or the hospital, he would do the operation. Well, later on, I saw the photo of this Ajahn Chah tradition in his room. Then I say, oh, you're also a Buddhist? He said, yeah. I said, yeah, I also word is I teach Dhamma, and then later we become friends. That's why it's meant to be. Then he said, he has his training, is it? So far so good, is it? He has standby specialist just in case any complication. But he said over the years that he has done all this, there was not a single accident or a single case that need the standby specialist or doctor to take over. So because of that, I can sense his sincerity and his assurance. That's why I say, okay, I will go for it. I say, give me your date. And he said, if you want, I can put you on. I think that day I saw him was Tuesday, I think. Then he said, there's a slot on Friday if you want. Oh, I say, okay, fix Friday. That's why immediately we went in and did it. And everything turned out beautiful, fine. So I don't make decisions. I act based on understanding. I find out, I assess. Then based on my Dhamma understanding, the condition that arise, the sign that come, I just make that understanding choice, which is a decision based on wisdom and understanding. I don't choose out of confusion. So when you are forced to choose as a dilemma without understanding, that choice is confusion. So you don't choose. When you understand, you act. You act with wisdom. That's the big difference. So true action based on understanding is not a choice. But people can argue, not a problem. To me, without that understanding, whatever I say, you cannot comprehend. But to you, you use the mundane mind to think, to justify, to argue. No point, because the mundane mind, which don't have the understanding, the wisdom and the awakening, is limited, cannot understand many things. Okay, I think we have shared enough. We go back to the notes. Because it's about time to meditate, right? I think almost 4:10 already. Oh, new chapter. So just nice. We finish, yeah? So we end there, okay. So, oh, just nice, okay. So we end there. We are at page 22. Oh, sorry. The other book. Yeah, 2-3, right? We finished 2-3, right? Okay, Word of Wisdom is 2-4, right? So that is the next chapter. We will stop here. Then we will have our 45 minutes of meditation. Yeah? Okay. Just nice, 4:13. Okay, we will off the light. Yeah? Then you can have your 45 minutes of silent awareness meditation. Just relax body and mind completely, be at ease, and let your mind settle down. Maintain awareness, just aware, finish. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Just silent everything. Stabilize the awareness nature, the so-called mindfulness or silent mind, so that you can be aware of the silence within. Initially, when the mental activity is still there, you have to be patient. Continue to just aware, finish. No need to think, no need to know, just aware, finish. If you feel sleepy, maintain awareness. If your body is very tired, you need to sleep, you sleep. And at the moment of snoring or whenever tactile sensation is strong enough, it will trigger off awareness. Then when you aware, you maintain awareness again until the mind becomes very quiet, until there is a shift in consciousness. Then you will understand all this. Just do. You need to do mind sweeping metta, combining metta or loving kindness, metta bhavana. You also can do. After you do metta bhavana, your mind state become more peaceful, more calm. that you do awareness-based meditation, it will help you. Give it a try, okay? Now we come back to our second session. Second session is meditation reporting. Yeah, Miss Lee, again.
Thank you, Su Yi.
Yeah,
brother. Wish to take this opportunity to wish you happy birthday one more time.
Yeah, sadhu, yeah.
And thank you very much for all the sharing that actually let us still at this current moment. Our mind is so stable and peaceful. Without your guidance and teaching, I think this is not possible.
Yeah, not possible. Yeah.
So another thing is also thank you for gratitude for establishing such a beautiful Kalamata ships to often support each other.
Yes.
And this makes our spiritual journey more at ease.
Yeah, also easier. Yeah.
Yeah. So so this is what I like to express, no words that can really represent our gratitude towards Brother Teo. So I think the right words I should use is Amitofo.
Sadhu.
Which represents a more holistic aspect.
Yeah, sadhu.
So another thing is I want to say is all the greetings, the video all is very successfully done, and thank you very much to the organizing committee. And another thing is I think for the wishes in the WhatsApp also is quite a good remembrance.
I
thought of using Sui, can you do the kudo god? I did already for the initial few pages. Can I pass it to you to download all into the kudo board so that you can make a card for remembrance?
All the WhatsApp wishes.
I haven't really looked into kudo
board yet.
I can send it to you. I done already for the first two first two pages.
Okay. I'll do it.
This one I think is quite a very meaningful, especially at this time, and it's quite good remembrance for the future.
Good suggestion.
Another thing is, Brachu, I want to ask, in one of the class, Brachu was saying that once you have entered a very silent mind, you stay with the object. That means the object in the silent mind itself, if you stay with the object, is it a concentration?
No. You might have heard me wrong. I never say stay with the object. I say stabilize that silent. Stabilize.
Okay.
Don't go and do anything. Because a lot of people, they are too eager to realize the truth or too eager to link it to the Dhamma. So before they can stabilize the awareness nature, they already wants to tell themselves
the conclusion.
Is that the Dhamma that Brother Teo shared? What you should do is you just silent, continue to stabilize. Then a lot of things will happen. When you have the real stability, the understanding will unfold by itself. A lot of things will happen by itself, especially the daily mindfulness. When you have a very stable sati, when your mind enters sati, when you come out, everything is in sati. And when everything is in sati, when you continue with your daily religious routine to stabilize that daily mindfulness, then you realize most of the time you already aware. Then through that nature, awareness nature, you realize you can see things that you never see before. Then you can understand all the subtle mental movement, mental intention, the mental like subtle like and dislike, or even the arising of mind. Everything becomes very clear to you and you become very sensitive. Then later on you will realize, think also like that, don't think also like that. then the mind becomes very quiet. Then it will return to the awareness nature. And that is the time when you go back to the form of meditation, then the cessation can come. Then after a while, when you are able to stabilize the awareness until the mundane thinking, the sankhara activity, everything stops, then you will go through a period of shift of consciousness where everything has gone, like what Pocheng went through. Suddenly very quiet, very still, only the awareness remains, nothing else. No hindrance, nothing to disturb you at all. Then there is clarity. Then you can also silence everything and without a center, realize that spacious awareness, the oneness nature. Don't expect it to last. Don't expect it to what? But whatever you want to know will be the awareness nature's ability to be aware. Finish. The moment you continue from there, it becomes the mundane mind. So the stability of mindfulness is very important. Don't try to know, don't do anything. But the knowing, the understanding will come. Because when the awareness nature pervades the whole oneness, that nature will know. That nature will like awaken to it because it's part of that thing. The form and mind is connected to that nature. Because when the mundane mind sees the awareness nature is very stable, very clear, then it will know what that thing is. But to know, you need words, you need concept, you need the mundane mind. So that one, when it come out, then you can contemplate, reflect. Then you will know what happened. That's why the experience that one experience while doing the awareness based meditation has no word, nothing. But that nature is capable of understanding, awakening. It can insight into phenomena, it can awaken, it can realize, it can observe and understand. Will that movement allow them to understand? So it's just like that phenomena telling you the story. Will you will observe and realize that phenomena is dependent on something. And that something, because of the awareness is so clear, your awareness can know what that condition behind. That's why you will know everything is dependent, originating, paticca samuppada, dependent on what thing arises, dependent on what thing is. Then when that supporting condition continue to sustain, then you realize that consciousness, the awareness, continue to have the ability to be aware. Then when it ceases, the whole thing ceases. Then the awareness nature later, you will also realize, is independent of sense data.
Yes.
Whereas the hearing consciousness needs sense data. But that nature that is aware of stillness, silence, tranquility of that true mind, no sense data, then who is aware? It is the essence of mind. Realize that, then you will have a different understanding, then you will come to a clear understanding that there are two minds. One is the awareness nature, which is the true mind. Without the mundane mind, that nature will manifest. The reason why living being cannot realize that or understand that is because they were too attached to the thinking mind. They use the thinking mind a lot and they think a lot. They want to know. They are actively using thought. That's why they can never realize that true mind, that silent mind, that awareness nature. That nature you need to really relax, maintain awareness and let things be. Like you are dead. A dead man cannot respond. Whatever happened, let it be. It was just aware, aware, aware. The tactile or whatever, that contact with senses. Whatever arises at the moment of sense experience is just that respective sense or consciousness. Just that consciousness arises. Aware of that. Before the input of content of consciousness. Initially very difficult. Because you are so habitual, your old way of living life, immediately before you even become aware, the consciousness take over and you input the content. You react, you stir, you get excited already. Then you labor already. That's why the awareness part, very difficult to come. Very difficult to develop the understanding. So, the formal meditation, when you do that awareness-based meditation, don't try to know. Don't try to even do anything. Just relax, maintain awareness, and allow that thing to stabilize. That's why we have relaxed, aware, 24 hours. You must stabilize it until you are ever mindful, constantly aware. So when that one stabilizes, the mind enters sati. It's like anapanasati or rising, falling, or chanting until there is no one chanting, until the mind and the awareness of that whatever chanting become one. Means the awareness and the thing become one. Then when it reaches that phase, when it stabilized, the mind naturally aware. Means no one to chant, no one to do anapanasati, no one to do anything. So mind enters sati, means the mind is sensitive. Without thought, it's a free mind, no need to do anything. It doesn't think, it doesn't move. But whatever that move from there is magnified. Then it becomes like a continuous train of slow motion movement. Means the awareness and whatever movement is like connected. Then suddenly you realize there is sati. We have no thought, nothing, just the awareness and your kaya move as one. And when mind enters sati, everything you see also like that. The phenomena and the mind awareness move as one. Means the seeing consciousness, whatever you come to perceive through that seeing, you didn't labor anymore. You aware because you flow with the phenomena. That specific phenomenal awareness is aware of all the movement, all the activity. Like when you watch the TV, you watch the moving car, there is no word. The thought is not active, not distracted, it's not creating. It's just specific phenomenal awareness. Then everything, when you are able to do that, then you realize your hearing also same, the awareness and the vibration as one. That you want to know, you can know. It can arise the word and the concept. But the awareness is more important. You are fully aware. That's why later on when you see things, when you observe things, like the microphone, the flower, you see the real thing, not that concept of that thing, not the word. But the microphone, that word, create the concept of that thing. Then you assume you see already. You assume that that is the microphone. You take for granted is a better word. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Then you didn't observe that thing already. That whole piece of so-called microphone, which has no word, nothing, you didn't really observe. When you observe, there is no word, no labeling.
Mm-hmm.
The piece of art, the baby, newborn baby, they see things as they are. They got no idea of what color is. But that pure perception, the pure awareness, is capable of aware of that whole thing. That's why they can see things as they are. Not what the brain tell them, what, not what the views, opinion, and conditioning explain to them. No more. And that is the trained mind that has the power to observe, the power to be aware. It's just aware. So seeing, hearing, later on smell also same. It's like the awareness and that sense move as one.
Better.
You will not be distracted by it anymore. You will not proliferate anymore. Even that desire to have or the craving or the nice food, it will have that slow motion process of you are aware. Then that memory, that desire that wants to have it, it will arise. Then you are aware. Then the wisdom will take over. When there is condition to have, if I can afford, why not? Then you can go ahead and buy. But you do everything with awareness. like Po Cheng says, select food, buy fruits. Also, with awareness, it becomes so different. Means you are not heedless anymore. You are not thinking anymore. You are not like last time, wow, a lot of thought going on. But you are not aware. That is your habitual tendency. You see something, you comment. You see something, you comment. You smell something, you comment. You hear something, you comment. Then you recall something, you are lost in thought. You comment. That's why you are not aware anymore. Then sometimes you walk into mistake and problem. Sometimes you trip and you bang into people. Then sometimes when the phone call, your attention straight away go to the phone, and when you speak or answer phone call, you are not aware at all. Everything become like automatic action, mechanical action, and that is lack of awareness. But when the awareness is there, it's different. It's aware. That movement of the hand to receive that phone call, to take that phone out, you are fully aware. Then it don't have to be in slow motion. It can continue like normal. Then the moment you hear that hearing consciousness, you're aware, then sometimes you may not know it's your own phone. It may be somebody else's phone nearby. But then the awareness, if you have that clarity, you will know. Well, your phone has certain characteristic of call vibration and ringing tone. So if it's not your normal one, you will know straight away somebody else. But if it so happens somebody set the ringing tone same as yours, then you may make that guesswork that maybe it could be yours. So what you do is you will mindfully put your hand into your pocket where your phone is. Then you will feel it. If there is vibration, you will know. Then you take it out. Then you want to answer, you answer. If you don't want to answer, if it's a call that is not familiar, you decide to switch it off, you can just switch it off. But as you do all this activity and movement, there's an awareness in the background. That's why the awareness in the background is aware of all this action and movement. That's how we live life. From awareness, we come out. That's why aware from inside out. So your question, I think you must have heard it wrongly. When your awareness nature stabilizes, de-stabilize, stay with the object. No, I never say stay with the object. I say you can be initially when you anchor your mind to your heartbeat or to your whatever vibration, you can stay there, then be with it and sound aware until it becomes very quiet, very still. Then sometimes that heartbeat initially very gross, how it transform and become very quiet and very slow, then suddenly very still, then the heartbeat also like no more, gone. You can be aware of the whole phenomena, the whole phase. Then it will continuously evolve and change, and you will experience different things. Then when the vibration or the heartbeat, subtle one like no more, you think you didn't have heartbeat. No, that is not cessation. The heartbeat actually is still there. But it is so subtle that you cannot feel. So you have to continue to relax, maintain awareness. That's why there are many stages to go in. Then when you relax and maintain awareness, this nature will become more and more subtle, more and more sensitive, more and more stable. Then you will experience the various type of emptiness, void, and all those things which the normal mind cannot experience. Where this one is only the awareness nature that can be aware without the sense data. It can be aware of stillness, silence, tranquility, and there are various stages of it. Then when it's in the oneness, it's also different again. Then, like one of the Kayamita, she described to me, every morning she wake up, she do the lying down, the mind become very quiet, very still. Then she starts to experience many things. Then there were one incident, I think, where her mind state was very good. She did the awareness until it's very beautiful. Then the understanding came. She starts to understand many things because that nature understand. So that is very good. Then all of a sudden, it could be devas rejoice or whatever. Then it, for no reason, it start to rain. Then that rain was so strange, you know. It started off by very slow, like a few drops, but very clear to her, you know. Then later on, it pick up, you know, and then it go again. Then it come, it go again. She has the ability to be aware of all those things. Of course, initially, the easiest one is the chipping of the birds with early morning. You hear a lot of all these things. And the awareness of it is, there is clarity. That chipping of the bird, when you listen from that awareness, is so different from the thought listening, you know. The thought listening, a lot of commentary and all those things. That one fully aware. That music is so creative, so natural, so beautiful, and very sharp and very quick. That's why you can feel it. You can be aware of it. That observation is totally different. It's not the thought. It's when you are in the meditative state. That's why the awareness nature is a very, very powerful nature. That one is wisdom energy. That one is just a nature, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. That one can understand, can awaken, can insight into phenomena. That's why you must realize that. That is Huining's first hallmark. No thought. Take you to the true mind, which is without thought. And that stage, you need to go through. There is a lot of things to do to stabilize that. That's why initially, don't try to know. Just do. Stabilize that one. Until very stable, until the mind enters the deep, then you are able to be mindful throughout the day. Means ever mindful. That's the beginning of heedfulness. Then that phase will take a while. Then until later on your mundane mind collapse. Maybe it will take you a few years. I don't know. For me, 9 months. It take me 9 months. Then it happens. Then after that, I don't have to do anything. My nature shine forth. Then my nature is all the time there. Then I don't have to do anything. I don't have to be like ever mindful. But the nature without the mundane mind is ever mindful.
Yes, right.
Then it will be normal again, natural again. That's why I become normal again. At that time when I transform, I don't want to talk about all these things where nobody can understand how to teach, how to share. That's why the three stages of seeing is initially is mundane seeing, kan san, si san. Then when you realize the silent mind, the direct seeing, the awakening, then you realize that pure awareness or pure perception before the knowing, before the concept, Kan san, bu si san, because mountain is a concept created by the mundane mind, the labeling. But your observation is that nature. What is the reality without word? That's like kan san, bu si san. But at that stage, it's still a duality, like Eng Bi realized. You have to transcend duality. Where you still argue when the philosopher say, this is mountain, is it? You're not enlightened yet. You don't have the ability to have direct seeing. That's why you see mountain. I don't see mountain. But the two fellows will argue and say, but if you have realized the third stage when your mundane mind collapse already, then you will go back to normalcy. Normalcy means either the unconditioned or the condition you understand. When a guy who hasn't realized the unconditioned or the direct seeing, he talk to you, yeah, there is mountain. Yeah, there is mountain. Then the one that has the awakening and come and say, no, I don't see mountain. Thing is just the way it is. You can also accept, agree, and rejoice. Yeah, sadhu to you. You have the understanding. You have the cultivation. That's why you become different. So at the third stage, there is no more duality. There is no more argument. You become normal again. You can accommodate both sides. You can accept both sides. Whatever. No more duality. To you, everything is just the way it is. Nature. conditioned like that, things will be like that. He is the way he is. So all this understanding will fall into place. That's the beauty of the Dhamma. Salute to you, huh? For creating the condition to let me explain all these things, Miss Lee. Huh? Salute. But now you can slowly develop the understanding where you have changed. You have developed very much clearer understanding. Except that the deeper part of the awareness nature, you may have to continue to develop the understanding and the learning further. Just like last time, you cannot penetrate the mundane mind. That's why you keep on using the mundane mind and ask questions. Then sometimes you report your meditation at the time, you think you already know, but there is still knowledge. But that's why my nature knows. Then I advise you to be patient, to just do. Then you, one thing good about you is you never get unhappy, angry or what. Maybe the ego is slightly affected, but you know that I am different. My nature is different. If I can go to Wu Ping Jing Se and teach like that, which you never heard before, you know there is something in this being, this person, his understanding. Then you patiently actually develop the cultivation and the understanding. Then you start to pick up the words that I use. That's why your birthday, that Dhamma words and plug that you frame it up is very useful. The moment I saw that, I know you start to understand what I mean, because the awareness nature is very important, that to realize your true mind, let it return. So you are the few who actually starts to have that understanding. The rest are still mainly Dhamma surface, superficial, means mostly knowledge. But some have the contemplative wisdom from first turning, it move on to second turning. But they don't have the penetrative silent mind insight. So that one, you need to cultivate. You need to stabilize the awareness nature. Then only you can progress and move. So hopefully with this explanation, more and more cultivators can understand. Then they will know how to develop it. It will give them faith. Okay, Ms. Lee, sadhu to you.
Thank you, Brother.
Yeah, you can continue. Anything else?
No. There's one, I noticed that there's a slight difference between using the what you call the anapanasati initially stage, where you, there's a slight difference to do anapanasati in meditations or using awareness. Because when you use awareness, it's more what you call that, you can aware more happening rather not only on the breath itself. It got more awareness of other, like for instance, you can suddenly realize that your senses is actually function simultaneously.
I understand what you are trying to ask, because after you have gone through those stages, you will have this initial understanding, which is not bad. But I will explain it further so that you have a clearer understanding. You see, all this anapanasati or awareness of whatever, rising, falling, or what, the word is awareness. Like the Buddha said, kaya nupasana. The first category of cultivation is mindfulness. The word is mindfulness, aware of the in and out breath. Okay? Then like you say, you realize when you do anapanasati, the in and out breath is the one that lock your awareness. Where you supposed to be aware of that. That's it. Yeah. That's why it's not a free mind. It's not a free mind. It's a conditioned mind. That's why you develop that awareness. But people cannot do the relax and aware because they don't understand. They don't have that spiritual faculty. The mental hindrance come in. That's why it's impossible to do. So they did the wrong thing. Then they realize they are always heedless thinking. The mind, the thought is active. with the habitual tendency, with the five mental hindrance, they lack the stability of the spiritual faculty. They cannot be in a state of relaxed awareness, free mind with sati, without the mental hindrance to hinder them from entering the meditative state. So they need an object of meditation, skillful means to meditate. Then most of them end up never follow the instruction of the Buddha. They focus, they concentrate, they know, they go into one-pointedness, means they keep on using the jhanic factor. They apply their thought there. Yeah. That's why sometimes anapanasati become focused on the tip of the nostril, the feeling there. Then sometimes they do the absorption in front of the nostril until it's very calm. Then they fix it and do one-pointedness, ekagata. These people all deviate. But if you really do anapanasati, the main thing is just aware, breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware. Then when your sati stabilizes, you experience piti. And breathing in, experiencing piti. Breathing out, experiencing piti. That is still, in a way, some verbalization. But the real sati is to be aware of that thing that arises. No labeling, no word, nothing. Then this anapanasati, it will continue. As you go through the process, if you continue to relax and maintain awareness, it becomes long breath, long breath.
Yes.
Then it becomes very calm, very still. Then from piti, it transforms and becomes more refined. Then you experience sukhang, please. It becomes very blissful. So that is continuous mindfulness going into apana samadhi. Then you go deep, it go into jhana also, the energy build up. But the purpose of the Buddha is not to do all this, because sukhang is not an enlightenment factor. You have gone too deep. It's apana samadhi, not upachara samadhi. Upachara samadhi is the threshold before going into apana samadhi. Apana samadhi is absorption, focusing, the condition state. Means you already focus or continuously make it aware and you don't want to know anything. You just absorb into that object of meditation. So a lot of people do that without understanding. Then they get interested because they experience the sukhang, the bliss. Then there is like craving, desire. Every time they meditate, they want to experience that. It makes you very calm. It makes you very still. And it makes you very blissful. Then that time, the energy make you look young. You cannot, you get old or you decay very slow because the energy is very recuperative and very peaceful. The cells like it because it's a type of joy, spiritual joy, calmness, blissfulness. But if you meditate to experience good mind state, good meditation and attached, then you don't develop wisdom. Then you cannot free. That's why you have to release it out to normal awareness to do daily mindfulness. But the purpose of anapanasati is to train the mind in sati. Then because I did it in the past before, the teaching never explained further. Because after you continue your anapanasati, after it becomes long breath, after it becomes very quiet, very still, very blissful, you can be aware of the full in and out breath. And every in and out breath is very long. Sometimes it lasts for a few minutes, but there is clarity inside that. One in breath and one out breath. Then later on, I realized I continue to relax and aware. The sukhang also gone. Then my mind become very quiet, very still. Then actually the mind wants to enter sati already. Then I realize that breath slow down. From long breath, it become normal again. Then after that, the normal breath also slow down until very subtle, like no more breathing. Then I realize there was no breathing at all, so still, so quiet. Then later on, I realized there is internal breathing, which I cannot detect. But because I naturally understood what this is, because I did it in the past, my cultivation from the past, I started to have this ability to stay there. Then I didn't do anything. I didn't even follow the Burmese say, when your rising, falling become very subtle, do sitting, touching. Forget about it. Because when you do that, you stir your mind again, you create sankara again. But this one is a stage where the mind is going to enter sati. So when the mind continue as a free mind is because the anapanasati is not doing its work anymore. It is not following the in and out breath. But the in and out breath no more, understand? No?
Yes.
It becomes so subtle. No more means what? I got nothing to hold on to. I got nothing to anchor to. So there is no more object of meditation. Then like swimming. If you hold on to the float, you don't know how to swim. Because the real swimming, you don't know. Although with the float, you can easily swim. That's why with anapanasati, when you hold on to the breath, you can be aware of other things. They can be in that state for 24 hours. But no use. So I realized that I don't have to hold on to anything. My mind can be in sati. Then all of a sudden, after I did it for a few sessions, I realized the mind has entered sati. Initially, I don't even know what the word is to describe that. Because I realized the subtle breathing come back to me. I was able to be aware of the very shallow, very subtle way, like no more breathing, but it come back to me, like very clear to me. Like there is something very fine, very subtle, that movement. But that movement is enough for me to maintain awareness. Then suddenly one day, it becomes so quiet and so still until like there was no more movement. But my mind stayed there, tranquil, still, aware. Then whenever the thought want to arise, it is very near. Then I realize the mundane mind and that nature, the two, very near. Then I continue to relax, silent and away. Then all of a sudden, one day, when I came out of it, I realized, how come like that? My awareness become different. All my movement is like magnified. Even when I was sitting in the formal meditation doing anapanasati, sometimes I need to straighten my back a bit because after some time I relax, it will curve a bit or slough a bit. Then when I start to do that, actually it's a very fine movement where I can do it mindfully with awareness, very subtle. But it like magnify, that movement like magnify, like something very big. Then the whatever vibration, wherever I locate this mind, I realize I become very sensitive. That like the awareness is there. Then I try the heart, I try everywhere. Then I realize wherever I locate, it like a magnifying glass, it becomes very, very, very powerful. That it magnifies the thing. That's why all the heartbeat, everything, the whatever, I know need stethoscope, I can feel. I go to the brain, I know which part of the brain when I eating or tasting, which part of the brain cell responsible for that type of sensation, I know. Then when I come out of it, I realize my activity, my hand, my movement, my leg, everything become one with my awareness, my sati. That's how I came to know the daily mindfulness come. Then after that, like Chia realized after that first retreat, the third day, I think he realized that. After he sit, initially he lie down, he tried, then he was mindful throughout the day until he walked down, take the lunch or the whatever dinner or even drink. He was so quiet, so still and fully aware and mindful. Because he know how to follow the instruction. Well, that time I teach him. Well, after the first day, the second day, I think before the afternoon session finished, before we go down for lunch, he approached me. He said, Bertil, I want to learn from you. Then he want to pay respect. Then I know he already make up his mind already. Because he initially, the first 1.5 days, where he don't know me. He heard from song, he read my book, he cannot understand. Then he questioned me left and right. But every time he questioned me, I answer him beautifully. That's why he has faith. Then finally he decide to follow what I teach. Then I say, okay, you'll come back early, because after lunch we normally meet, I think at 2 o'clock or what. I told him you come 1:30. Oh, he was very punctual. Before 1:30 he was already there. Then I say, okay, now shall we start? He say, wait, Virtue. He want to pay respect. Oh, miss, he has humility. He really, really desired it. So he pay respect. Then I say, sadhu to you. Okay, now we can start. I straight away draw the triangle and teach him. Yeah, he did the 49-day retreat before. He has the training and the mind state to understand all this. But he did one last time, is mainly going car on the continuous mindfulness, the absorption and the jhana one and all those things. So because of that, when I show him the triangle, the consciousness, the right slope is mundane living, the form and mind down there, the maru. The left side is the direct seeing. You use the pure awareness to meditate. The direct seeing, the silent mind, to insight in the floor, to develop the wisdom. Then use the wisdom on the left-hand slope at the end, connected to your form and mind, to live life. That's how the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, arises. Then he straight away understand, no, why thought-based meditation is dead, cannot be done. So he follow the instruction, relax, aware. Then he go the other side. Then he was curious, he tried the lying down. Then he also went into the sleep, unconscious or subconscious state, you know. Then all of a sudden he snore. Then he was aware, you know. Then he realized that no wonder people lie down snore. Then he realized lying down meditation is the real meditation, with the easiest posture to relax. That's why after that he transformed very fast. Then on the third day he became very different. He was full of joy. Then he reported a lot of things. That's how people progress. When they understand, they have faith, when they have developed the training of the mind long enough, they will understand. So I haven't finished the Anapanasati explanation yet. Now I will go into it. So because of that, the difference is, if you do Anapanasati or rising or falling or what, you have to do until it become a free mind. That free mind enters sati. Then after that, no different. It's awareness-based meditation. Right? We are no more object of meditation, no more noting, no more verbalization, nothing. It's just the awareness, because it has become a part of you. The awareness has transformed and become so stable until mind enters sati. Then everything you do is in sati. Kaya anupasana, hearing, seeing, smell, taste, tactile or thought. Everything is in sati. And that is the mind that you will develop. So when we can develop that, then we have stabilized the awareness. But instead of going through that, Huining, he know, no need to do all those things. Actually, the Buddha also knew no need to do all those things. That's why he teach the 5 spiritual faculty to overcome the 5 mental hindrance. But that part of the teaching, it was missing from the teaching passed down. They teach both that 5 mental hindrance, the essential Dhamma and the 5 mental hindrance. But they don't teach that these two are opposite mind state. To counter the other one, you need the spiritual faculty. Then they also didn't teach the awareness-based meditation, because during the time of the Buddha, they are all taught Anapanasati, most of them in India. because that was the favorite meditation practice. They cross their leg, they do anapanasana, they go into one point and they develop jhana. So that was very popular. Then that time there was no mindfulness of the rising and falling, all those things. All those things came later, later tradition. Then because of that, the Buddha actually revert back to anapanasati because he also start from there. But then somehow the teaching, I think, went missing. We are only the close disciple understand the whole practice of anapanasati. Then later on, people debate because they like jhana, they like concentration, and they like the object of meditation. Then method and technique take over. So when the focus is on the method, the technique, and the teacher, the whole teaching get distorted. The whole teaching become distorted because anapanasati is supposed to be the first category of cultivation of kayanupassana. After that, you're not supposed to continue with the concentration or the samatha meditation or absorption meditation. You're supposed to move on to awareness of the four posture. That's where people go wrong. The awareness of the four posture is easy, because the connecting posture you haven't done. That's why the third category of cultivation is the Buddha complete the thing by saying daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, means everything you do in daily life, you must be mindful. Then he add in clear comprehension so that you don't make mistake. Without clear comprehension, you will make mistake, you will debate. So that was the cultivation. But people didn't do the four posture and the daily mindfulness. Sati sampajana, which was also mentioned in the Avijja Sutta, they didn't do. They didn't see the importance, and they also don't know how to do. That's why they cannot do it. Then they get interested in the 32 part, but they don't know what that 32 part is. It's supposed to be like the block cut analogy, the four elements. The 32 part, then the 9 stages of 7-3 decomposition. Well, at that time, I think a lot of monks, they had this lust, this desire, this craving for the form and all those things. So that's why the Buddha teach all those things. But the essential one is actually the first three. Mindfulness of the four posture after anapanasati. Anapanasati is to establish the mind to be in sati until we enter sati. When you enter sati, everything you do will be in sati. But you have to start from the four posture. Well, these are the posture you always have throughout the day. Then you move on to the daily mindfulness. Then when you develop the daily mindfulness, it will stabilize your mind to really enter sati. So you can either do the bowing until the sati come, then you will know. Or you do anapanasati until sati come, you will know. Until mind enters sati, either or. So these are dependent on method and technique and skillful means. But finally, end up with four foundation of mindfulness.
Yes.
But when you do awareness-based meditation, which Hui Ning teach, is very direct. Hui Ning say, wu nian, without thought. So it takes you to the stage of no thought. No thought means no need to think. That is your true mind. So that's why silence everything and realize that true mind. But in the Mahayana teaching, Hui Ning's hallmark of the all teaching, they never teach you how to do. Because it's not a method, it's not a technique, it's not a doing. And Hui Ning can do because he was born without the mundane mind. That's why I understand all these things. So the understanding is to just allow the mundane mind to settle down and realize the true mind. But you can do it following the understanding of the Buddha. That's why I said that part is missing. You develop the five spiritual faculty so that the mental hindrance is gone. When the mental hindrance is gone, your faith, sadha, and virya, they will make your mind composed and active, means clarity, not sleepy, no sloth and torpor. Then that mindfulness that you have developed, the third spiritual faculty, will be the beginning. That is awareness. Then when there is no mental hindrance to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state, then this awareness happens to be your meditative state. That's why the awareness take over. Then you experience the deep, calm state of mind without thought. Then you stabilize that, it becomes samadhi. When you stabilize that, means the mind enters sati, become very stable, it becomes samadhi. So with sati and samadhi, you continuously develop wisdom and understanding. That's how the teaching is supposed to be. So you realize with the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance no more, there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering sati. So sati take over. So mind enters sati. That's how you become mindful. Then you continue to stabilize it. Don't do anything. Relax, aware, maintain 24 hours until it's stabilized. Then it becomes samadhi. It becomes unwavering, collected. That's how the spiritual faculty transforms. Then you can, with that sati and samadhi, sitting as they are, at the moment of sense experience, because of the samadhi and the sati, it does not stir, it does not waver. Then the brain, the memory doesn't come in and interfere. But it can see things as they are. Then the direct seeing becomes possible. Then you understand why kan san bu shi san. Then everything becomes the way it is. That's why the Buddha says see things as they are. Direct knowledge and vision of the reality, truth. Not about your mundane mind telling you. But all this is lost in between. That's why people cannot understand the cultivation anymore. So because we go direct to the silent mind, we relax and maintain awareness, let the mundane mind settle down. Or if your five spiritual faculty is there, you straight away aware, we have sati, take over. Then you enter the meditative state very fast. That's why that meditation is the fastest. And a lot of Kayamita experience that. A lot of Kayamita. Especially at a retreat, they can do. So straight away, they realize, like what you realize, it's a free mind, fully aware. No need to focus, no need to concentrate, no method, no technique, no need to do anything. Just relax, aware. That's how the whole teaching comes. So now, you know why you say Anapanasati is still more restricted. It's not a free mind. It's because the process is different. The purpose of the Buddha's teaching is that time it was popular, so he from there he start and tell people to do. But that last part of the teaching, until mind enters sati, no more passed down. Well, they pass down the chanting only, and the words only. But all this, like what I share with you now, just imagine. The Buddha, after his Sammasambuddha enlightenment, taught for 45 years though. If without language, if we without the words, yeah, and the IT technology now, how can you preserve the teaching? Whatever I share with you, let's say verbal, we don't have writing, we don't have recording, let's say like the Buddha's time. Even you gain back the original teaching, the true understanding. But how can you preserve this?
Yeah.
So they come up with chanting. But how can you chant until the mind enters sati? Cannot. The chanting becomes too long, understand? And it defeats the purpose. If you don't commit it to chanting, people will actually distort the message. Yeah. So all these are the reason why over the years, the teaching has become distorted, deviated. And it's very easy to understand. If the teaching based on the commentary and what the text has recorded, there should be more and more enlightened being in it. How come we are not seeing that? We are seeing society decay, the Buddhist community decay. Until when Buddhism came to India, after Huineng came only, the thing flourish again, arise again. Then after Huineng again, it went downhill until now. Of course, there are a few great masters and teachers who have the teaching and the understanding. But how to teach? Not easy. That's why we were lucky. I set out this Kalyamita website. This one helped a lot, like you came to realize that teaching with the website, with the recording, with the audio file, video file, and the Heart Sutra book, that's why all this teaching can come out. Then now it's easier for people. Like even after I explain, like today, very detailed, do you know I've explained this so many times to you all? But only a handful of you all really catch a little bit of it only. And it took us so long. That's why you can recall, last night I used to say, unless you cultivate and progress to a certain stage, I cannot share. Well, there are so much things that my nature realized that I cannot share unless somebody is able to understand or near it. Otherwise, when I share, no use. It defeats the purpose. But sometimes, when there is condition, I do share, because the higher being, the non-human, they want to listen. That's why at the retreat, annual retreat at Sampo Temple, sometimes you realize not the thing I share, very deep one, and not for the human being. Then even in the Heart Sutta Club, when it was raining, and all, it's for the non-human. It's not for human being. But luckily, they should thank you, Sister Lee, because you invited me to Wu Ping Jing Se, and you took the short note, and from there I edited it and transformed into the Heart Sutra book. That's why you, like Yun Chan, will have a lot of parami, because the Mahayana teaching actually came from you. You started it. Although Yun Chan was the first to invite me to come out to share. So these are very beautiful, very wholesome. Then Sui An also played his part. He started the Thursday class. And the person responsible is actually Eng Bi and Mi Fong. They are the one that request. That's why Thursday class came from them. Then Tuesday class came from Eng Chai. They invited me to Champaka. Then after Champaka, I think Anne and Anne Chung and Hui Yong, Hui Lin, they all, and Vincent, and a few of them, including Jared, they all. So from there, I shift it back to my house, because that time I was having 4 classes a week.
Yeah.
So I have Tuesday class, Thursday class, Sunday class, then Saturday class at Champaka. No? So I say, why not? Because that area, not so many people. So I said, why not you all come to join me, my Tuesday class? So they came. That's how I settled back with 3. Then there was also after my angel. After my angel, I decided to reduce the class so that I have more time to rest. That's how all this thing happened. Okay. So now you understand the question that you asked just now is very good, very relevant. Is because you haven't understood the full cultivation of Anapanasati. Finally, mind enters sati, that's why it's the same. But instead of waiting for you to do Anapanasati for so long until mind enters sati, then only you get it, the 4 posture and the daily mindfulness, why not you straight away do the 4 support, relax, maintain awareness, straight away go into the normal state.
Actually, I did. Actually, my natural awareness came from the daily mindfulness.
Ah, that one very important.
It came from a daily mindfulness.
You don't have
and
to.
And I enter one.
Okay.
I enter. I got a glimpse of the sati in one whole day.
Sadhu. Very good.
Actually, I noticed that actually the wisdom showing the anger, it went to 3 stages.
So the first time
the wisdom came is that it reversed. Instead, you see, when we got angry, we normally our mind will be outwards.
Yeah.
It will outwards. Then it will actually all together to the phenomena.
You but get drawn away.
Wisdom show, the wisdom reverse.
Yeah, la, the Yoniso Manasikara from you, and you from inside awareness, you know how to apply that wisdom. That's why it reverses.
It reverses already.
Correct. In your own word, it's reversed. But when you are aware and prompted by the Yoniso Manasikara, the wisdom, that's why you don't get angry anymore. You will not be distracted and drawn out. Then the best way is, if you don't have this, which you have developed through the daily mindfulness and the Dhamma contemplation, what people can do is stay with the awareness, like Kok Lun Leo. The anger, it manifests. Then silence everything and stay with it. Find out. That is the third way. If you do that, it will help you to understand better. Then you realize, without doing anything, it says, today, the Jay Krishnamurti quote I sent out, you all must read it. That one is the explanation. So you see, this Jay Krishnamurti quote is what you must develop the understanding. And the third way actually give you the understanding. Jay Krishnamurti, daily quote online. He said, we are creating our own time. And therefore, we are slave to time, which is, I must achieve or become something in time, means successful, enlightened, or whatever. But understand the nature of time and remain totally with what is. What is the present moment, the reality. Take for example, he said, envy, for example. Don't try to transform it into something else. Even anger also same, fear also same. Don't try to transform it into anything else. Remain with it. This is the third way. Stay with it. Just maintain awareness. And look at it. Observe it. It's with mindfulness, awareness. As you observe, what happened? You don't give it any more mental energy. You don't want it to change. You accept it. You want to find out what is it. That it will dissolve. So this dissolving is very important. As you observe, it dissolves. I mean, it ceases. In that observation, there is no time. Where you are fully aware. That's how you will come to know. Then I add in the word, that is peace, liberation, and freedom. This one I add in one, so that you can understand. Here, as you observe, it dissolve means your wisdom will arise. Envy, anger, fear is not you. It's dependent, originating, condition arising. It's not intrinsic in you. That's how you understand it. That this is impermanent, dependent, originating. And then you connect it back to the Buddha's teaching. Krishnamurti no need to connect. He straight away realized he know no reality. He doesn't use Dhamma word, but he use wisdom, understanding, day-to-day language. So this is the third way that I try to let you understand, Miss Lee.
Thank you.
Use that to actually develop the clear understanding. But this is insight. After you silent and be with it, it ceases. Then there is an awakening from that silent mind, that nature. I don't have to do anything. Everything ceases. What does it mean? It means this is not intrinsic. My intrinsic through mind is when I silent and maintain awareness, it returns to its original state of tranquility, stillness. That's how I realize my true mind. Then when you understand that, then you understand the Buddha's teaching that anger, envy, the aggregates of mind, they are dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of not. That's why it's impermanent, not real, not what you think. Then the anicchang, dukkang, anatta, you penetrate, you awaken. So there are many ways to realize that. Sometimes the direct seeing. It depends on how you cultivate. Okay, so this is very useful, very helpful. Just now you didn't finish, you talk about the first stage. What is your second stage?
Second stage is it don't uh it it arrives, but it detected very fast. It just like just about to start. Then the
it's this.
Very
good.
The third one, whole day one, is actually, I think that one is a totally still.
Yeah.
It can't arise. It's not that you don't want it to arise, but it can't arise
you,
at all.
You have realized that thing. That's why the stability of it is already there. That's why it cannot arise. The second stage is still the second, the third right effort. It's a right effort to develop, the second right effort to prevent the arising of the wholesome thought. Means when you have the initial wisdom already, when you can understand that these are evil root, they are not conducive for the holy life, then when they are about to arise, that yoniso manasikara, that initial wisdom will prompt you, anger is not you. Anger is unreal. Then the awareness will tell you this is the evil root of all evil. Then when you understand, just like Alicia went through, we are through depression, he saw all the wrong thoughts that make her miserable. Then he said, okay, and now for 16 years, you have done this to me. Now I see you. And then it says, so initially, it is about to start. Before it can start, the understanding came, then it says, like what you went through, that is the second stage. Then the third stage is, like you know, you will never get angry anymore. You have no meaning, understand? At the moment of sense experience, you don't stir, you don't react anymore. You cannot anymore. Because you understand the reality. Condition like that, things will be like that. He is just the way he is. The world is the world. And that is the real third stage wisdom. Then when you are able to develop that stability of wisdom through contemplation or direct seeing inside, that is what the Satipatthana Sutta, the Dhammanupassana statement is all about the five mental hindrances. He said when the five mental hindrances arise, you must develop mindfulness of it until it ceases. Then through that mindfulness, you will come to know how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Then how the arisen hindrance cease to be. Then the last one is how in the future this mental hindrance cannot arise anymore. The cultivator, the practitioner, the meditator will understand, the form and mind that go through all this will understand. And that is your three phases, the three stages. So this is what you will experience. That's why for your case, my nature rejoices. You can use your own word to describe this. And it happened to match and tally, which is very good. Salute to you, Miss Lee. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
Yeah, thank you.
I think we have to move on to another person.
No need. 6:20, we should end already. So we thank you first. We all rejoice together. Sadhu,
sadhu,
sadhu. Okay, so I think with this, we shall conclude and share merit transfer. So next session, Miss Lee can nominate somebody. Luckily, my daughter nominated you today, meant to be. Otherwise, all this sharing and teaching cannot come out. I supposed to stop at 6, but I let it continue because this teaching is very important. And the condition is such I can explain it in detail, but it's for your benefit. And also you have improved a lot. That's why my nature rejoices. Salute to you.
Thank you.